Hi, everybody, and welcome to season two of the Irish Podcast. I'm Jane.
And I'm Cormac. In this season, we share the ups and downs of our Italian journey.
From how we moved to Italy to the hustle of work, we'll be sharing what it's actually like to move countries.
Join us for our Tuscan adventures, our unforgettable bedbug experience, plus an Edinburgh Fringe special.
Whether you're a travel enthusiast or just curious, join us for stories, laughs, and good old Irish hospitality.
So we are carrying on from the last episode where we...
This is part two, yes.
Where we went through my career, where my background was, where it came from. So this episode is going to be about how did you get into your career, recommendations, all the different questions, and how we're gonna dive deeply into
Cormac might finally find out what my job is.
This is why we're doing the interview, right? We're gonna do a quick deep dive into the career of Jane.
Yeah.
So start us off. What is your brief educational history? Your brief, you know, past jobs? Where did it all come from? Who are you?
I'll try and keep it brief because the other day I was trying to update my LinkedIn, and on my LinkedIn I had 38 past jobs, and I managed to kind of condense that a little bit, but I think in total I've had over 60 jobs now.
Yeah.
Which is a bit wild.
It's a lot.
I'm at 30 plus one. So, you know, I've got a few more years on you. But yeah, I've had a strange career. I did an undergrad in NUIG, or University of Galway, in arts. Not worth the piece of paper it was written on, but as my dad said, he was like, you don't have a clue what you want to go and do. Why don't you go and piss around
in
and
arts.
Learn something more. So I did psychology sociology and political science as my undergrad. And then I took a gap year, didn't know what I was doing myself. Recession had hit and I could barely get a job. I had like a little bit of waitressing experience. I had modeled in college and had gained a severe amount of weight going into my gap year, so I couldn't model anymore. So I was kind of working like promotions. I was doing some kind of, you know, just like drip drops of work. I didn't have anything settled, and it was very difficult to even get like a bartending job at that time. And I felt like such an idiot in that gap year. I went on the dole. I didn't know what I was going to do. Thankfully, my parents were like, "Go. You've always had an interest in the arts. You grew up in the arts. Why don't you go and do an arts policy and practice master's?" From like in my gap year, I had gotten a Jobbridge scheme job, which is essentially where you're still on the dole, but a company and a lot of companies at the time were taking on people, just saying, "We are going to pay you an extra €50 on top of your dole," which I think at the time was maybe €180 a week. So we'll give you €50 extra a week if you work 40 hours a week for us. But I got in with a really, really nice company. They were a boutique, a clothing boutique. And I had a little bit of social media experience. I got really invested into social media, into website building, all that. So I got a laptop when I was like 13, 14, got really into building websites. And so I kind of looked after their online store and building out their social media a little bit. And that's where really I got my start.
Is that before you ended up doing your little blog as well?
No, I'd started my blog, but I wasn't truly invested. I kept on jumping in, jumping out. I was never really
dead. Side project.
Yeah,
it was always just into it when I'm bored.
Yeah, it was always just a bit of a side project. And at that time, please remember that there were no influencers. Like, that wasn't a thing.
No,
Instagram wasn't a thing. I didn't realize. I kind of kicked myself now where I should have just stuck to my guns and been like, okay, if I'd stuck with that initial blog, then... You know, who knows what happened, but sure, look, you know, you always look back because people just didn't know what it was back then. But I had gotten into this boutique and they were really good to me. And I did my master's and they kept me on for pretty much all of my master's. And I wasn't very good, to be honest. So I was just learning as I was going. But they did give me a really good opportunity. During my master's, I'd gotten a couple of really, I would say, really big arts jobs. I was still there in a little bit of an intern or a little bit of a coordinator, bottom of the barrel rung.
Paid internship?
One, they were both meant to be paid. Okay. One didn't end up paying me. And that was the beginning of my big lesson in always have a solid contract, but always realize that as a freelancer, you're not necessarily always going to get paid. So that was a huge learning lesson for me at 20, where my dad just went, you got to grow thicker skin if you're going to be a freelancer or work in this industry. Finished my master's. I went into retail for a year. I actually loved retail. And I didn't particularly enjoy the people that I was working with, but I really enjoyed selling clothes. I really enjoyed the customers. And I loved fashion at that time.
Yeah.
And I sold really well, which was brilliant. But I kind of thought, you know, I have a master's, you know, working in retail, maybe I should kind of try and use my skill set that I've learned a little bit. So there was a tech company that I'd always wanted to work with. They were part of my thesis. I applied for them. I got a job. I was absolutely delighted. Moved to Dublin, worked for that tech company. I've signed an NDA with that company, which is actually still in effect, so I can't talk too much about it.
Go on, tell us all the crap.
I don't want to get sued.
Go on.
Because they definitely would.
Well, my business Doyle now. Go on, how you been? Just tell us a little bit.
They're the biggest technology conference in the world. So if you want to look that up, then you'll find them pretty handy.
Let's not give them too much detail.
But I worked for them for, I had a year-long contract and couldn't last. Hated it. Hated the office style. Hated the corporate lifestyle that they got. It was like a very Americanized kind of
in Ireland and Dublin, especially.
That it was just come in. Yeah. Like Google had just come in, LinkedIn had just come in,
Facebook,
and
eBay, all those big boys.
It was just a bit of a nightmare. And I loved in the run up to events. That was really exciting. But as soon as the event was over, I was like, why am I sitting in the office for 10 hours a day when we're not doing anything, like just pretending like we're all working? I really, really disliked it. So my partner at the time was a comedian, and I had worked on and off doing, I'd done the Edinburgh Fringe a couple of times, just going over for a month for the crack and stuff. And essentially he was like, either move to Australia or I think we're finito. So I just went,
what an ultimatum.
I'm not enjoying my job particularly well. And if you go to Australia without me, then you'll leave me. So I got in touch with the production company that he was with, and they offered me a job on the spot. So went to Australia. I ended up doing the Perth and the Adelaide Fringe. I was working with lots of different comedians. That was very exciting. Made great money for that time as well. They paid for my visa. They paid for my accommodation, my flights, everything. That was great. So that kind of got me back into the arts world. And then for the next 5 years, I essentially worked in the arts, different festivals, different events, worked in the UK, Ireland, Australia, all over. And I absolutely loved it, but it started growing and growing, and I was getting more clients. And it got to the stage where I had, in 1 year, I had 18 clients, and I was just getting burnt out. I knew that I was either going to have to expand. I had one or two part-time staff who would like cover me for some stuff, but it was either develop an agency or reduce my clients.
Yeah.
And I decided to reduce my clients, and still on the face of that burnout. And this was even through COVID. COVID happened. I still had amazing clients. And then on the back end of COVID, things just completely exploded. I think a lot of people moved out of the arts, obviously, because, you know, there was no events going on for almost 2 years. So when I came back in, there was a huge opportunity to pick up clients, and I did, but I just burnt myself out. And so I knew I had gotten the opportunity to go traveling for the summer. I was always working remote clients. And so I moved to Italy with you. And I've picked up an amazing corporate client, which I'll probably talk about later in this episode.
Yeah.
But I have one good corporate client, and I've got my favorite arts client still to this day. And so I'm really, really happy working.
That's a good segue though into our next question, which is just like your current jobs and like where you're at right now. So
my current jobs are, I have an energy engineering company that I work for who reduce CO2 emissions. They go into different businesses and they do everything from energy audits to like project management to completely redefine what a business outputs are. So that's one of my clients, and that I would say that is one of my all year round steady clients.
Yeah.
And then I also have an amazing client called Blue Teapot, who is a theatre group. Though they've got a school, they've got community outreach projects. They're really, really strong. Like it's amazing what they're doing. But it's health and arts.
Yeah.
And they are one of my all year round clients as well. And then I've got a few different festivals dotted like throughout the year. So I feel really happy now that I've got like my two little main clients.
Yeah.
And then I've got the fun projects throughout the year.
Okay. And then going from that, you're happy now with your clients. And I suppose, you know, for anyone trying to find clients or get into your industry, for someone who wants to get into a career in marketing or events, what should people do?
I think it's two very separate things. Like marketing is marketing and events are events, even though I have a really nice crossover. If you want to work in events, then God bless you, but you got to be a hard worker. And the best thing that you can do is to simply apply to work in events. Either there's multiple different avenues that you can go down. Do you want to go into the production route? Do you want to work on site? Do you want to do the bills? Do you want to work for 6 weeks leading up to the event? Do you want to do the takedown after events? Do you want to work in administration where maybe you're going to be working all year round, like the financial side of it, or maybe the communication side of it, or the grant application side of it? There's so many different areas and events that you can work. Like, do you want to work in lighting? Do you want to work in artist liaison? Do you want to work in volunteering?
Something that people will always ask as well, whereas it's like, how can you be, you know, either in social media or in marketing, but then also be involved on the ground? Because that's very much, from my point of view before I met you, a job that I would consider is only solely in the office.
Mm-hmm.
So how does it like intersect to being on the ground in a lot of ways? Is it just because you take on different responsibilities, or is it like the social media, the marketing person expected to see how things go on the ground?
It's totally different. So I had a marketing perspective truly before I got into the arts world, and I ended up doing more courses than that, like after my master's and stuff, just to top myself up essentially, because marketing, again, it wasn't the hugest thing. Like social media was not a big thing when I had started my career. So I was really lucky to be doing social media, but for arts organizations or for events who maybe had put social media a little bit on the back burner.
Yeah.
And I was the one to be like, I can come in on a producer capacity or on a production capacity, but I can also do the social media for you.
Yeah.
And so that's how I ended up getting a lot of my clients was, hey, I'll come in and I'll look after the artist accommodation and travel and transport, but I can also do your physical and digital marketing for you. And that's how I kind of sold myself. And then as I learned more about marketing and as I became more niche, I was able to turn to those clients that I'd worked for being like, it was great working production and it was great working this, but I'm kind of focusing more on the marketing. Or I could turn to it if they were a bigger festival or a bigger or arts organization. I could say, you actually need this all year round. And maybe for your grants applications, it's more beneficial to you if you have an all year round marketing strategy and I can provide that to you.
Yeah.
So I think it was because I had the dual skills, I was able to get in with some of the companies that maybe I wouldn't necessarily have gotten into. Yeah. And whichever one was the strongest, then I always sold off to them.
Absolutely.
So yeah, it's been a balance. I've always worked for years, it was always 50-50 production and marketing. And then as time has gone on, especially after COVID, it's now more like 20% production, 80% marketing.
So did you find it easy to transfer the experience you learned with your Dublin corporate client to suddenly going into events in Australia, working with comedians? Was there a lot of crossover? Do you recommend like doing your own side project?
100%.
Self-publication, just like...
That's all you're going to know. Whether it's just... If you're in college, like my biggest thing was even in university, I was always working with the societies. I was always... I was vice co-auditor of Rucksack, like back in my first year. I would help set up gigs and stuff. And that's just, you know, you had said in the previous podcast that if you want to work in, you know, the hospitality industry, you have to really enjoy it.
Yeah.
I always knew that I loved working at events. My dad is a musician. He's a poet. He always worked in the art sector. And so from a very young age, I was always brought to events as a child, might have hated them a little bit as a child. But I was very much involved in that world. So when I got to college, of course, I always wanted to be like helping with events and help set up and lug the gear and have that little bit of crack. And so I continued that even when I started a corporate job. You know, every Sunday I would, you know, set up a comedy gig in the middle of Dublin and help out. And thankfully my partner at the time was working in a creative, like, you know, comedy industry as well. So I would help him as much as I could. And
so in the terms of someone who doesn't have, like, either, you know, a dad who's a musician or a poet or a boyfriend or a girlfriend.
Go to every event you can, go to every launch you can. When, if you go to university, I'm telling you, like, just go to every single event that you possibly can and ask and volunteer with the societies.
Ask questions, get involved.
Get involved. Yeah. People are always looking for volunteers. But I would say cap it at your first year after university, because a lot of arts organizations can take advantage. They can take advantage of volunteers. A lot of festivals, especially in Ireland, can take advantage of volunteers as well. And so set yourself a limit and be like, if I'm not offered a part-time or a full-time gig after X amount, then I gotta move on and I gotta either look at a different organization or maybe the arts isn't quite for me.
Yeah. So then what's been your hardest job, either past or present?
I think the hardest job was that tech job that I had in Dublin. Again, I signed an NDA, so I can't say much about it, but also just mostly the company culture. I knew that I didn't fit that corporate world. And so trying to fit in there whilst also massively feeling like an outsider. And my life was still very much in Galway, even though I was living in Dublin. I was traveling back to Galway as much as I could. I'd always try and get like an hour or two short on the Friday just so I could get the bus home.
Yeah.
I wasn't I was trying to invest in the company because I looked so much up to them. But after a short period of time, I realized that the company values actually weren't aligned with my own at all. And that it was very much sales driven, figures driven. And it's funny now, in turn, I feel like if I went back there now, I'd be a lot more aligned.
But that's a big self-discovery to actually find in your own career path, where you're just like, I'm on this side of the coin and where I'm actually working.
Yeah. This side. So I think I kind of went from, what's that saying? Like, out of the frying pan into the fire.
Yep.
So I went into kind of like my dream job in comedy, and I worked in the comedy sector on and off for 2 or 3 years. And I actually find that my toughest job. It's a tough gig. Like, I feel like I'm quite a tough lady with a bit of common sense. Sometimes I can be weak at times, but it's very late nights. It's a lot of drinking. It's a lot of, you know, older men telling you exactly what you need to be doing, who think that they know a lot better than you.
Yeah.
And you might only be taking tickets on the door. Do you know? But I found it really tough where I...
Because you did a lot of like actual, like, for want of a better word, like man management as well, like artist management, making sure that they were set up, ready to go.
Compass mentors, looking after their tickets, looking after their wages.
Seated, you know, on time before the show started. That was kind of your role.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily just that job in Australia. Like, I think that job in Australia was actually fantastic. But I think
been in events in general.
I think that whole comedy side of things, if you work for a really good company who look after you, you'll fly it.
Yeah.
But I think as, you know, I was a good looking woman in my mid-20s and that may not have necessarily been the place to be 4 a.m. in the morning when you're trying to look after 10 male comedians who are all kind of taking the piss out of you. So
100%.
And then my actual toughest job, just to laugh back at you, is my first ever job was when I was 17. And my dad was like, okay, maybe I just turned 18. He was like, okay, first year of college, like summer break, you have to go and get a job. And I got a job.
Oh, let me guess.
I got a job in the Radisson Blue.
There it is.
As a waitress. I was fucking useless. I couldn't, like, even at 17, I had such, like, I didn't even have a teenage attitude. I just had a Jane attitude where, like, I'd bring them out water and they'd be like, excuse me, I would like some lemon, not a lime. And I'm like, does it make a difference? Like, do you know, like, I didn't have that.
Oh, yeah. I've had people ask me for hake. The lovely fish you can find, and they were like, can I have a portion of hake? I was just like, what the hell is going on?
I
get it. Yeah.
I don't have it in me. I don't have the hospital. Like, people are really, really stressed in hospitality. They work extremely long hours.
Yeah.
I remember like one day I'd started like breakfast at 5 a.m. and like, fair play to my dad. I always have to like, I never at the time understood how good my dad was, but like, we lived 20 minutes outside the city center. And so there was no buses at that time.
Yeah.
And I had said to my parents, like, oh, well, I may be thinking about moving to town with my terrible boyfriend at the time. And they were like, no, you can't. And I was like, but there's no buses that could bring me in for 5 a.m. And my dad was like, I will drop you into work.
Yeah, your dad would be G for that.
My dad 4 times a week dropped me in for that summer. And like, that was just...
Fair play to him. I have to say it the other way. It's a job that will learn you.
Yeah.
I like 100%. If you hate it or if you love it, it'll be a job that will learn you.
But there was one time then that like I started at 5 a.m. I did the breakfast service. Then they asked me to do the lunch, which they very rarely did because I was shit at the lunch. And then all of a sudden it was like, we have a wedding. Like, we've got a banquet. You have to come in and help.
Yeah.
And so I started at 5 a.m. and I didn't finish until 1 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And I never forget like sleeping for almost like 12 hours that day, like the following day, just being like, this is not for me.
This is not it.
And also I was on about 7 euro an hour and got emergency tax. So
there you go. Welcome to hospitality, baby.
Woo.
So what is it like to work remote? Give us an insight to, because people have only discovered remote working since COVID, but you've been doing it for longer. Give us 2 pros and 2 cons to the remote lifestyle.
Well, I would say the pros is I'm exceptionally lucky, but again, I'm not only, you know, remote working, but I'm also freelance. So yeah. I can work my own hours. I can pick and choose what days I work. I can shape my rota around yours. You know, like you work 40 hours a week. I work 40 hours a week, but I can say, okay, well, Cormac is working this next week. That's when I can set up my, you know, to the best of my ability. Yeah, but, you know, so that's really good. And I don't think... You know, in previous, like in any other job, there is no way that we would be able to see each other as much as we do. So I think that that's really great, is that I can work my own hours. I can shift it around. I think it makes relationships work a lot better. When you can pick and choose your own hours. The other obvious benefit is that I've been able to travel, even though for the first 7 years of working remotely, I did not decide to do that. But, you know, I'm here and I've been traveling now for the last 18 months. So that's really positive. But yeah, definitely, like, it's the flexibility. It's really positive. So yeah, I would say that's the number one thing of working remote.
Good. Yeah.
The other thing I just want to mention as a positive note is working remotely now, especially that we're in a different country, is the lack of accessibility that other people have to me outside of hours. So it's, you know, Cormac was my bartender for years.
I watched it over the counter where this lovely lady was just trying to enjoy a pint. And then all of a sudden, another client of the bar would come up to her and be like, hey, Jane, can you help me? Like, my phone isn't working, or I don't have these login details to this festival.
Can you write me an invoice?
Me an invoice. You can do this and you can do that. So it was very much.
Or just even, can you get me a job? You know?
Yeah, like, But it was very much, it was just like, as long as you were visible, you were working. And that's a horrible way to be. And like in the last episode, I mentioned that it's like, for me, the separation is the key. You know, when you're not working, you're not working. But unfortunately, a lot of the times in your career, that's not the case. People expect you to always, it's your lifestyle and you're always working, because you don't have like an office. If people see me sitting on the other side of the counter drinking a pint, they know that they can't ask me for a pint.
Yeah.
But when they see you.
But I think that's specifically to events and to the arts. Like, 100%. It's not necessarily like if you're just like a regular.
Corporate is
If you're a corporate, well, no, because even then if you meet, you know, like you can meet your corporate buddies outside of work and then all you end up is talking about work because you don't see each other face to face and you can communicate a lot better. So I do find it tougher. Like, sometimes remote is great because people can't touch you if you're away, but it can double down then when you actually like do go home or do go into the local pub or you do meet up with those friends that you kind of, or your coworkers.
Yeah.
It can really double down in that way. I think then the negatives for me, one of them is the constantly working, as I've slightly touched in my pros, but you know, it's, you know, you are just, if you are a freelance worker and you're working remote, I've had phone calls at 3:15 in the morning.
Yeah.
Like I've had, like I've told, right, like I've told bosses or people that I'm working for, hey, I've got, like I'm cutting off at 7 p.m. tonight. I'm hosting a dinner party. And what do they do at 1 a.m.? They call you because something's gone wrong with the website or something.
From a personal point of view, I've seen this, like where me and Jane have gone out for dinner, like during the holiday. And all of a sudden, a client just phones Jane.
And I have to take it.
Because there's a big issue either with the website or tickets or something. And Jane just has to go. Just all of a sudden, boom, okay, I'm on a phone call. And like, as a boyfriend to someone in that line of work, you don't know how long it's going to be.
Yeah.
You know, you can't interject. You can't talk. Like, I obviously can't talk.
I will say it really affected my last relationship where they worked corporate. They didn't work in the arts.
Yeah.
I think like between yourself and some other prior boyfriends, like you've all either worked in like the industry or like.
Yeah.
Events or customers.
As I always say, the separation is great. Anytime I go to a bar I work in and they ask me for help, I'm like, yeah,
great. Yeah, of course. No problem. Yeah.
I mean, so I understand it. But it's really tough because I feel more sorry for you than I do for me. Because I, like in those situations, I still get to sit at a table and have a glass of wine. And I just feel bad that you're off and you're on a phone call.
But no, it's just, like also because I'm working with people, like sometimes I can be working with clients who are in different time zones. So then it's like, well, you know, I am technically able to be on the phone from 8 a.m. until 2 a.m. in the morning. And then I still have some flexibility with that. So it's like, if I get a phone call, I have to take it. That's just the way it is. But I've definitely cut down on that a lot more. I do always remember, can you please tell the Amalfi Coast when we had to do when I had that meeting?
Oh my God, yeah. So we were doing, like we were getting a transfer from Salerno about the first transfer was like 30 minutes around the coast of Sorrento. And then we were going like up to Positano, whatever. And Jane had to take this huge meeting. And we were on a boat. We were getting the ferry. And Jane was still on the meeting when we landed.
No, the ferry was 2 hours late. So that wasn't...
No, but it was meant to be... Yeah. It was like Jane had timed it perfectly. But unfortunately, the boat timing did not work out. So we ended up transferring during her meeting, which involved Jane having her backpack on, her laptop in one hand, and her phone held up to her face while I held the top handle of her bag, guided her off the boat, then had to look at the lady who was like, where are you going next for a transfer? And she was like, come here. So I had to grab Jane. And another guy tried to stop us and was like, where are you going? I was like, I'm just following the lady over there. And the lady started screaming at the guy, being like, let them through, to what kind of Jane looked up from her meeting. I was just like, follow the angry lady. Just like walked her across the boat, pushed her onto another boat, sat her down, and then just went and got a beer.
Didn't get to see Positano at all. But anyway.
No, you were looking at a laptop screen that was in your hand. That was the meant. Yeah, that was meant.
It was a good meeting, though. It was good.
Good.
Got a lot organized. The final con that I just want to mention, but I think that it is improving with time. And I think by the next generation of people, it will be sorted. But I worked remote for the last 8 years between different jobs. And so, you know, I'd have at the beginning, it'd be simple jobs like write as a blog post or put up social media posts or, you know, hey, can you do like, but now it's grown where it's like, hey, can you do financials for a huge festival?
Yeah.
And I lived at home an awful lot on and off in my 20s, and my parents just did not understand that I was working. Like literally broadcasting EU project event meetings, I would have my mother walking in saying, you know, do you want me to cook dinner? And it's out of the goodness of her heart, but she just didn't understand that it's like, when I'm in the office, I'm in the office. Like as I had two towers of shoe boxes, like building, you know, like it's just, they just didn't get it. Like, you know, or like I'd be working from bed an awful lot because I didn't have, again, a desk or whatever. And they just didn't understand.
Yeah.
And I think they're getting better at it now, especially like my brother came home during the COVID period and he had gotten a job, which was part-time remote and then developed into like an on the road job. And then they saw him working and they were like, oh, well, he works for like a real corporate company and he's working remote. So it must be a real job. But, you know, for 5 years there, it was like, no, I do have a real job. It's just, you know. So I'm hoping, you know, to anybody who works remote out there, and then people just think, oh, sure, you're just hiding up in the room on the Facebook, you know.
It's actually, you're just clicking a few buttons, and it's not that hard, and anyone could do that.
You know, and sometimes, like, they, like, you know, people just don't realize, like, I've had housemates do this as well, where they'll just knock on the door, walk straight in, and be like, here, will you fix my phone? Or like, hey, will you, can you help me book a flight? And it's like, I'm in the middle of work, do you know? I wouldn't walk up to your workplace and be like, here, will you clean the sink? Like, do you know?
Yeah.
So it's just a bit of an interesting one, but I definitely think it is improving. And
a lot more people doing it now. It's a lot easier to see that it's like, no, the working hours of your day are from 8 to 5. I know, obviously, we just said that yours can be very variant, but it's like, no, like, you treat it as a normal job. Don't disturb when they're doing something.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose then, like, in that regard, how has technology changed your job over the last, let's say, 10 years?
I would say two things. One is that it's definitely become more socially acceptable. So people, you know, your mom, your dad, your granny, your granddad, everyone is starting to understand a little bit more that, oh, well, that device allows you to work. So I think that's a really positive thing. I think that, you know, there's a huge pushback at the moment because a lot of huge corporations have a lot of office space to fill in Dublin. And so they're like, no, you must come back to the office. But I think everyone is starting to get the jig is up. Why should I be why should my commute be 3 hours a day and I'm not getting paid for it? So people know, like, you know, I wasn't getting paid for my commute, or, you know, you weren't even like giving me money to fucking commute to this office. Why should I be doing it now? So I think that people are starting to click on that remote working can be very beneficial, not for everyone, but.
But obviously Zoom came in and like different platforms, apps, technologies.
So the other side of technology I want to say is that there is a huge thing where niche programming has become more accessible for everyone. So like if you think about 10 years ago, you had to know Photoshop to edit a photo.
Yeah.
Or you had to know like certain video creation platforms in order to fit it. Like everything was so segmented. Or to build a website, you had to be a full-on web developer. Whereas now I think for that middle tier person who wants to get into marketing, or for organizations who don't have a huge budget for marketing, it's like you can build a Squarespace website and it'll be €250 a year, like, but you can build it in a day and a half. Or you know, there's Canva instead of Photoshop now, so you can get, it's not going to be as pretty or it might not be as amazing, but you can still get the job done on a lot lower of a budget. So I think it's, I feel like I fall into this real median of, you know, I'm not a graphic designer, but I end up doing graphic design. I'm a web developer, but I end up doing web dev. And I think in the last 10 years, it's really grown from, instead of me having to spend a month trying to learn how to build a website, to, okay, I can watch a couple of YouTube tutorials and really get into this, you know, ChatGPT it, like, how do I build a website? How do I, you know... So I think that tech is just becoming more and more brilliant for that middle tier company who doesn't have a huge amount of money. But that you can, it is coming down to, it is going to be harder for like the waylay marketing person, because they're going to put everything on one person where they're like, you need to be sales and you need to do B2B and you need to do B2C and you need to do like your Google, your Facebook, your Meta ad, and you need to do all the creatives and you need to do the graphic design and you need to do the physical marketing and you need like, but it's making it easier overall. So I really enjoy that aspect.
So apart from like, let's say ChatGPT, leave that to one side. What are like the top three apps that you think, or websites that people should learn now? Is it like Squarespace? Is it like WordPress? Is it like, what are the three like number top tiers? Like?
I think having a really, really good background into, like, I think you just need WordPress across the board, because for a high, like for a good institution or for a good website, they're always going to go back to a WordPress build.
Yeah.
So I think knowing how to, maybe not even necessarily build WordPress sites, but how to use the back end, that is so important. You need that if you want to get into marketing.
Yeah.
The next one is Canva. just get shit out of Canva. Like, you need to like look up, even on TikTok, just spend like 20 minutes a month. Like,
so you taught me how to do Canva, like, yeah, when I was trying to do image development for an idea that I had. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how you use Canva. And like, you taught me in like 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It was hugely beneficial.
And then the other one is, there's twofold, like, if you want to get into some kind of you need to know how to work Excel and Google Sheets, no matter what job you work in.
Yeah.
I feel like even as a bartender, you're going to have to start learning
Excel. An Excel sheet is always going to be, like, even in hospitality for me, it was like, we had to learn Excel.
Yeah, like, you need to know how to do your rotas. You need to, like, know how to do a stock take. You need to do whatever. So Excel/Google Sheets, you just need to know it. I'm sure that they're teaching it properly in schools now, but who knows?
I feel like in colleges for sure that they're still doing that, because they did that for us. You know, we had to learn it. Obviously.
Yeah, they wouldn't be doing it. They wouldn't be doing it in a psychology degree now. But yeah, definitely you need to learn how to work in Excel. And then yeah, if you want to get into marketing, some kind of scheduling platform. Whether you use like an in-house one like Meta, like Business Creator Suite, even though it's a piece of shit, or look at like Hootsuite or something like that, because there is you just need scheduling as a marketing manager, yeah, especially if you want to take on a few clients.
Oh, your timing is so important.
Yeah.
Yeah, big time. And then I suppose, like, how can people get into remote working? Because that's a huge thing now after COVID. Especially after COVID, I think people opened up to the whole concept of remote working, because everyone had to turn their house into an office. So it's like, what is the biggest one there? Like, how could people get into it?
I think it's so true. Like, if you've never worked in a corporate job in your life, or if you've never worked on a laptop, customer service.
Yeah.
There's so many customer service jobs, and there's huge corporations that you know, they might be in Canada, they might be Europe wide, and they're always looking for just people who can be on the phone. Shopify is a really good one. Like, if you want to learn some like basic coding, like the coding is just pretty much attuned to them. But like, if you want to get into the customer service experience on them, or so you don't need to have like, you don't need to be an influencer. You don't need to have social media background.
You don't need to be a coder. You don't need to be
like
a lot of good genius. Like,
but just look up like, you know, customer service jobs, like whether it be phone, whether it be like response, whether it be like, if you look up what Intercom is, like the chatbots that'll often pop up on the right hand side of a website, then you'll get what I'm saying. But there's a lot of jobs for that. Then coding, if you have 8 months, and if you're an 18-year-old and you're like, college isn't really for me, I really want to dedicate 1 year to get in and make a load of money. Even though I would definitely just say go into a trade job at this stage, but you know, coding is always a really good way to make a good amount of money. But if you want to get into marketing and build up a niche marketing business, even though I would say it's so wary at the minute, like, you know, because AI is just getting better and better and better. So, you know, I think even my job for a lot of stuff is going to be obsolete, and that's why I've gone I've swung from the production to the marketing back into the production again, because you know, AI is just going to be doing my job in a couple of years. But I do think, start small, go into your local bakery or your local coffee shop where you have some friends, and you're like, hey, can I make a couple of TikToks for you? Can I make a couple of like pictures for you, whatever? And then just say, here, like, for 50 quid a month, can I come in and do that? And you know, if you get 5 of them, and then just build it and be like, here, I've gotten a really good return. Like, would you mind giving me 100 quid a month? And just build it up for that. And then you get your experience. And maybe a year down the road, you apply for like, you know, a part-time gig. So you
Like, hey, can I put that on my CV that I have to increase your customer base by 5, 10, 15% every month for these last few months? And then you have that experience.
You know, and just keep on looking up like online, like how to set up Facebook ads, how to set up Google ads, all that. And like, you'll just learn as you go. But if you start with a very small base and work your way up, instead of going and doing a marketing degree or a business degree or anything like that, I think getting on the ground experience is the best way to do it. I think even more so if you're already working in a bar or coffee shop or a restaurant, saying, can I take on the social media?
Yeah.
Because they would only be feckin' delighted. Like,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, 100%. And then going off of that, for like remote working and like, how can you get into it? What advice do you have for people that are already remote working, or people who are becoming freelance Like, what advice would you give for someone who's been doing it for a lot longer than most people, like pre-COVID?
So just my advice for freelancers is appreciate your best client. Always put your best client or your oldest best client first. Don't see somebody who's maybe coming in and has you on a 2-month contract or on a set fee and be like, do you know what, I'm going to put them in front of my best client.
Yeah.
I think I've learned a hard lesson in the last year and a half, and it's always look after your best client first.
Loyalty. Yeah,
total loyalty. Don't overrun yourself. Don't take on too many clients. Or if you don't feel like you're the strongest at delegation, or if you can't get good staff, then you're just going to have to drop your weakest clients. And it's recognizing your weakest clients.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's not just like the money. It's who calls me the most out of hours, who causes me the most hassle.
Who keeps asking me the same questions constantly. Who's not taken my advice and who's listened to it and just done nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you just have to recognize if you feel like you're overexerting yourself, you have to realize who your toughest client is and just say, look, I'm really sorry, I've been offered a different position, or I'd love to work with you in the future. Just this year, it's not going to work for me. The other thing is to have your invoices in order. It's bitten me in the hole a couple of times where I don't want to spend 2 days out of the year just organizing invoices and receipts. So just make a Google Drive or keep make some kind of a drive and so just put it all in there. And then the other biggest piece of advice, which I am only learning myself in the last 2 years, is to build your own brand alongside that. And I hate saying build your own brand. It sounds so like Instagram-y, TikTok-y, but it is. There's a few marketing people and PR people, especially if you live in Ireland or if you live in England or if you live somewhere that like maybe the job market isn't as large. If you feel like you're quite niche and you're going to be working in a niche industry, do build up your own thing alongside it. Do have your own project going on. Even if it's not monetary driven, because at the end of the day, you could work for a company for 6 years, they could drop you. And then what do you have to show your future prospector? Only, well, I built this company up so much and now I'm no longer working for them, but their social media was really good last year. You know, like,
absolutely. Yeah.
So I think always having something of your own that you're in control of, I think that that's really important. And that's something that I'm trying to focus on now.
And have you ever had like any big regrets on like dropping a client, saying no to someone, and then they've gone on to become like something huge? Or do you always think that you've kind of called at the right time for you personally?
I think there's been one or two. I think there's been, there's definitely one or two clients that I think I could have done more for, like where I was in the kind of developmental stage with them, or they were trying to expand the business and I just didn't see the worth in it.
Yeah.
And they've gone on to do amazing things, and that's brilliant.
Well, you haven't got, like, in certain jobs, I'm sure you probably haven't got the appreciation that you think you deserve.
No, I think there was a couple of really, really good clients that were like, okay, let's like be at the beginner stage. Like, I always offered like a kind of 6-week, kind of package them where it's like, let's build up your business, let's look at all sides. But there were just some clients that their business didn't interest me.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, I have to be passionate, unfortunately, about a business to market them.
But of course, that's the same as me in hospitality. You have to be passionate and you have to want to work for someone.
But unfortunately, I am technically a salesperson, so I should be able to sell my soul a little bit more. But unless I truly enjoy the product or the person or the project.
But I suppose then, like, for someone then who's in remote working, how did your job change when you moved to Italy? Like, did you find a massive difference?
So I think one of the biggest changes was, although I was remote before, I had always been that remote worker, but had never left the country. And so I was always able to like pop into the office here or there. And it's not to say like I still travel home for like big events or anything like that. Like I still travel back to Ireland like 4 or 5 times a year.
Yeah.
So for anything like upcoming, I'll always pop in. But I think when I was remote, I would still always drop in. Wasn't being paid to drop into the office, but I always would. So it was a little bit of a difference for me from going to maybe I'll pop into them once a month where I might meet the new employee or I might see the new person who's come on or I might hear the new, like, you just hear more through the grapevine.
Feel you were like a remote worker treating it as a hybrid job rather than like...
Totally. Yeah. I worked in an industry where, okay, the arts doesn't have a whole lot of money. So some of the people that I were working for, like, they didn't have offices. Or they might only have offices for like the 4 weeks leading up to an event.
The actual event.
Yeah. There were other people who just didn't want me in the office the whole time. They were like, "Oh, you're a marketing person. You can dot in and out. That's the way you operate. That's fine." And then there were people who, although they weren't paying me to come into the office, they would expect me to sometimes, and maybe not remunerating that. But I think when I moved to Italy, I think I'll just tell, this was probably going on for far too long, but I'll just tell one story of, I had a client that I really liked, and it was a bit of a tough gig, but I was quite passionate about it. And I'd always worked for them. They didn't have an office. I started with them just at the beginning of COVID, and you know, they had done 2 online festivals. That was all great. We moved into a physical festival and that worked fine. I did not come into the office because there was no need for me to come into the office.
There wasn't an office originally.
There wasn't an office for the first 2 years.
Very hard to come into work when there is no
but then
physical space.
After COVID, they decided, okay, because 2 of the main managers, they had never worked remote before COVID. They really disliked it. They wanted the social aspect of it. And so they found an office space, and all of a sudden it was like, you should be in the office. And I was like, well, I have 6 other clients. I work for you part-time. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And I'm growing my business. Like, I can't set. And they were like, oh, well, you need to work set days or you need to whatever. And I was like, I'm a freelance marketing manager, or like, I'm a freelance marketing consultant who's always been this way. But unfortunately, it was the type of contract that I had signed on to where I was an employee of theirs rather than a freelancer.
Yeah.
And that taught me an awful lot, where I was like, I should have just signed a freelancer contract with them. But it was, at the end of the day, they thought that they had a lot more control over me. And I was like, this is the way it's always been. Because you guys have decided to implement changes, that's fine. When it's the end of my contract, we'll discuss it. We were only meant to come on a holiday for 6 weeks, and then we ended up staying. However, I did relay to them. I was like, look, if you want to keep me on, that's great, because nothing will change. It will be the exact same as it's always been. I will still be dotting back to the office, you know, once every 2 or 3 months, just like I was prior when I lived 30 minutes out the road. But if this is a big deal for you, then, you know, I'm kind of not interested.
Even with that contract, it was remote.
It was remote. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that's really important.
Even the job description said that it was remote.
Yeah.
So
I remember this, because it was ridiculous for them to ever suggest that. It's just like, because that's a hugely important in your line of work for anyone that's interested in getting into it. It's like, reading your contract of employment is so important, because like, for someone like me, my job is, you know, it's the regular stuff. It's just like, yeah, I won't throw coffee in someone's face.
It's so different in marketing, because especially if you work in events marketing, it's so different, because there's some weeks where you might be working 80 hours a week. There's other weeks where you might only be working 5, because there's not a hell of a lot to do. You just post stuff on social media. Yeah. But it all balances out throughout the year.
Yeah.
And you invoice accordingly if you're freelance, or if you're on a salary base, or if you're an employee, it works out. Just unfortunately, they decided that even though it was a remote job, that the office was still technically based in where they were paying me from. And I tried to fight my case, to be honest, because I was very passionate about that job for, you know, a couple of weeks. And then I just went, you know what, if you don't appreciate what I've done, that's fine. And we'll shake hands and we'll walk away.
Yeah.
And I wish the best for that organization. You know,
they tried to instigate that your remote contract was actually a hybrid one. You know, there's office employment, there's hybrid employment, and there's remote employment.
Mm-hmm.
And the day that they start to be blended or changed into the same, then there's a big issue, because this is like, especially based off your contract. And I think especially for your career, it's so important to read that contract. And then I suppose moving to our ultimate question is, what is your 5-year plan? Give us the deets. Where are you in 5 years?
Oh, that's an interesting one. My 5-year like dream plan, or like, you know, pretty normal plan.
Dreams are achievable. Just give us your plan.
Okay, so the 5-year plan is, I would like to have 1 or 2 corporate clients, or to build up the relationship that I have with my current corporate client, because it's a little bit in startup to midpoint mode now. So I would like that to grow and expand. On the side, I would like to start a marketing agency in the niche that I work in, just as like a half fun project, but have somebody else operate it, but like maybe have a 20% kind of investment in it. And then I would like to have at least 1 property under my belt that I'm running as an Airbnb on the way to buying a second property. That's the dream.
There we go.
As well as that, I would also like to expand out the Irish podcast, to grow the kind of TikTok following, to grow the online following, to grow my own branding that I didn't do in my 20s, because I really regret it. So I think I really want to like build my own brand, but like, you know, just build something on my own, build my own platform, build something that might be of interest to people. I don't care if it's just 10 people, 20 people who listen to it, but it's...
Well, it's just to build on that for those 10 or 20, and for yourself.
A long-term project that's like my own, and just something that I can look back on and be like, that's something that I love.
I did that. It doesn't matter how many people have, you know, engaged or listened. It's just like, I did that.
Yeah.
Also,
I never mentioned throughout this entire interview, which I should have mentioned, is that I'm a co-founder of the Ukulele Festival in Galway.
Ukulele Fest!
So I'm really hoping that that's going to become like a 5,000 person event.
Well, I someone on the outside, it definitely is, because I have seen it grown, because it was always heavily involved, where they do this beautiful event, usually outside of the pub I used to work in, that I won't give any details to.
You mean the most viral sensation of my marketing career?
Yeah.
So if anyone is interested in any of the festivals that I do, please look up the Galway Uke Fest, and just look up their flash mob, because it is the cutest festival that I work for. I'm so passionate about it. The people are so lovely. The people I work with are so lovely. And I really hope that that grows in years to come, like not as a main job or anything, but just,
just as a...
a lovely passion project.
Would you say then, that was your most viral moment?
Yes, that is definitely. Yeah, I think we're going to hit 2 million this year on like one of those videos. Crap. And like, but like, there's a bunch of videos that are hitting like almost 1 million. And just, I love the people who attend the festival. I love the people who run the festival.
It's just like, it's the most wholesome festival ever.
It really is.
Majority, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's just like, it seems to be so many retired people who just fell in love with the ukulele, and this is their big electric picnic festival every year that they go to, and they're just like, they tell the husbands, they tell the wives,
they can't get with it. Yeah.
I'm going to play the ukulele all weekend in Galway. It's the sweetest thing.
It starts at 4 p.m. on a Friday. They play for like almost 8 to 12 hours a day, and by Sunday they're still like, their fingers must be bleeding off them, they're still like, give us one more.
I'm actually like, the ukulele is only soft straight to the ranch.
But no, it's so lovely. So yeah, I think my dream is to continue with Ukefest, to continue with Blue Teapot, to continue with Vogri Pogri, and have all those lovely festivals, and then still have the long-term plans of working with those corporate clients, and you know, growing and expanding, and see, like, just reach for the stars and see how much we can grow. And
why not?
I do love my job. I used to, like, I got burnt out. I took a little bit of time off, took a little respite. Now I'm back.
We're back, baby.
Well,
Jane, thank you so much for your insight into all things your career, social media.
What do I do? What's my job?
The thing we were talking about for the last hour.
The internet.
The internet. The Facebook thing in your bed when you're just lying in bed and you're tapping your computer.
You work for the Google, don't you? You'll never learn. You'll never learn.
I will, because I'll listen to this podcast and I will know.
It's literally like Chander Bing. That's all.
Hey, I did my best Vincent Brown impression for the last hour asking you questions. I know. I just can't put it into like three bullets.
Neither can I.
Yeah.
It's taken us an hour
to be like, what the hell do you do?
Well, thanks so much for listening, everyone. We really appreciate it. And our next episode is going to be a big turn from this. It's going to be the bed bugs.
Oh, the bed bugs.
Our whole bed bug scenario and how we have hopefully gotten rid of them.
Well, just ran away from them.
Yeah.
just run. But yeah, thank you so much for listening. If anyone else has any questions based on even the last episode, my career or Jane's career, hit us up on TikTok, hit us on the website, message us. We're more than happy to answer any queries anyone might have.
Thank you so much for listening. If you like this episode, then you can find us on theirishpodcast.com or you can find us on any major social medias at The Irish Podcast.
We'll see you in the next one.
Hopefully. Can't wait. Six more months
in a movie.